Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is a special co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. Dr. Polacek is a nationally recognized expert spokesperson on mental health and substance use disorder issues. He utilizes his experience and his expertise to lead the Betty Ford Center's outpatient services as its director. Matt received a Master's of Arts degree in counseling psychology and a Doctor of Psychology degree from the Wright Institute, as well as an undergraduate degree from the University of Arizona. Now, if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. So, if you've been with us before, you know that each week this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. So, Matt, before we bring our guest, please bring me up to date as to what you're doing for the Hazleton Betty Ford Centers.
Well, thanks, Alan, and it's so good to work with you again. You know, you truly are one of the good guys and experts in this field, so thanks for having me. About a year ago, Hazleton Betty Ford approached me about leading their outpatient program here in Los Angeles, and for me, getting to work with really the gold standard in addiction treatment, which is the Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation, it was really quite a no-brainer for me. So, you know, we share this vision of being a force of healing and hope for individuals and families affected by addiction. The outpatient program that I'm running really provides excellent treatment and really brings treatment to the people of LA. I think there's a common misconception that treatment is really only for like rich and famous, but we really provide for all the people. We're an in-network provider, and we really look to serve the entire community. And so for me, it's great to be kind of pulling my sleeves up again, doing group and individual therapy, and working for a great organization.
Well, it is great to have you here. I'm looking forward to working with you as well. And share with us a little bit about the upcoming symposium. I know that there's one coming up a little bit later this month.
Yeah, Thursday, March 24th, we have the 2016 Annual Women's Symposium, which is entitled Living Your Truth. It's an excellent all-day event that includes five CE units. Each participant gets three books. And gets to listen to five really experts in the field. Aside from myself speaking, we have Jessie Close, who is Glenn Close's sister, and Jessie is celebrating her 14th year sober. She is a huge advocate for mental illness and also substance abuse. She's our keynote, and she will be speaking along with other professionals, including our own at Betty Ford Hazleton, Dr. Prescott. He's the director of our pain management program. We have Janelle Weslow that's going to be speaking. We have Tracy Klintis, who wrote the book The Next Happy. And it's really it's a panel of experts in the field that know their stuff, and it's going to be a great day, and hopefully people will come out. And those interested can go register at www.hazeltonbettyford.org/symposium.
Well, I know that I look forward to being there. Now, let's bring our guest. Our guest today is Dr. Will White. And Dr. White is a nationally recognized researcher and speaker on the history of wilderness therapy and is a passionate advocate for its use as a catalyst for change. He received his Master of Social Work degree from the University of Denver and his doctorate degree in leadership from Franklin Pierce University.
Will's dissertation is believed to be the first in-depth chronicle of the history of wilderness therapy, and he's a frequent keynote speaker on the topic. His new book, Stories from the Field, A History of Wilderness Therapy, expands on his dissertation work and includes chapters written by founders of many currently operating wilderness programs. Will's presented at numerous conferences, including the Wilderness Risk Management Conference, the Wilderness Therapy Symposium, and the Association for Experiential Education Conference.
Now, as co-founder of Summit Achievement, Will has helped to establish them as a premier adventure therapy program. In his 20 years at Summit, Will has served as a primary therapist, clinical director, clinical supervisor, and he's currently serving as the CEO. Will, thanks for joining us on Answers for the Family.
Back on your show. And Matt, I'm looking forward to having you involved in this dialogue today. It's an honor to be on the show with both of you.
So, Will, let's start with a little bit of the history of wilderness therapy. I know many of our listeners are people in the industry, and I know they're familiar with it, but I know that there are also many parents that are out there that still really don't understand what the history of it is. So share with us a little bit about what the history is and why you originally got so interested in researching the history itself.
Well, I've always been a history buff. I've always been interested in history. Actually, one of my years in college, I went to Boston University, and one of my professors was a man named Howard Zinn, who wrote The People's History of the United States. And so he was always encouraging students to find out the truth about the backgrounds of any field that they're in. I started being involved in wilderness therapy, I thought originally about 25 years ago, but if you look at the historical roots of the field, it actually, anybody who went to summer camp was involved in what initially was the original ideas of wilderness therapy was summer camps, taking young people and exposing them to wilderness experiences for them to become more independent and self-reliant. And the first summer camp that was independent in the United States was founded in 1881. It was on a place called Squam Lake in New Hampshire. It was founded by a man named Ernest Balch. And that this field, which many people think is new, is actually quite old. I mean, we could go back to Jesus' time in the desert, or the indigenous people and their rites of passage when young people were sent out to fend for themselves and to come back transformed. And in our field, so when I was doing the dissertation work, I couldn't find any stories to connect modern day programs with the past. And so, and anytime you're doing a dissertation, you have to fill some sort of blank in research. And so I decided to take this project on, and I think somewhat to the chagrin of my wife, who I spent a lot of time going to different libraries and flying. I spent a lot of time in Utah interviewing different people, and I found some common strands. Now, before my dissertation was done, the longest history of the field was about a 16-page mention in a book. It was a 16-page chapter, but it really missed a huge section, so it was a great starting point. And so I took on the endeavor of trying to fill it all in. And so it was like weaving a tapestry, because the more I started to delve back into the history, the more I found and discovered connections between one idea to another to another.
What was most surprising to you about when you started studying this field?
Well, the first was how old it actually is, because a lot of people speak to wilderness therapy as, well, it was Outward Bound, or it was at Brigham Young University. There was a course called Youth Leadership through Outdoor Survival. But no, it was summer camps in America, and then there was long-term summer camps. There was therapeutic camps. Specifically, I started upon some research and found out that Manhattan State Hospital in 1901, there was a tuberculosis outbreak. And so they had to take the patients who were in at that time called an insane asylum, and they had to, they separated them, but it was the summer months, so they decided to put them in tents on this island, and it's right next to Manhattan, and they noticed that the TB psychiatric patients actually were getting healthier than the patients who weren't isolated and who were on the ward. So the ones in the ward were actually not getting better psychologically, where the ones who were placed in tents and living on the grounds of the facility were doing better. So it started a movement called tent therapy. And there's research back to the early 1900s about the tent therapy movement. It then kind of fell out of favor because many things fall out of favor, and the institutions wanted to, it's easier to manage people in a locked facilities than at a is on the open grounds. And what we saw is a movement back into the facilities. But in the 1920s, there were specialized camps for kids with psychiatric disabilities, the first being in 1921, a camp called Camp Emmick, which is actually still in existence. But Emmick was founded by the Jewish League of Guardians in Manhattan, and they said, we need to provide mental health services during the summer months, but we want to have our clients out of Manhattan. We want them into the fresh air. And so they started this camp, and they found remarkable progress for these young people at the summer camp that they didn't see at the facilities back in the city.
You know, well, one of my thoughts is that, and when I was researching my book, Running Away in America, and I was going through the history of running away, what I was learning was that many of the changes that happened came from what people's opinions were. In other words, it was, you know, the idea of needing people for work or how we looked at it as a society actually had more of the change than actually the results of what were happening, you know, in working with people. Did you find that as well?
Absolutely. The setting sometimes changes everything. And as our society becomes more inside or connected to electronics, we're losing, we're becoming disconnected with the natural world.
Mm-hmm. Now, what drove you to continue the research and, you know, that you did for your dissertation and decide that there's enough here that you need to write a book about this field?
Well, once you do a dissertation, you're asked to present. And so I presented a fair amount. I published in a book called Adventure Therapy, Theories, Research, and Practice. But what I wrote about was much about the past, really about the early 1980s, because I didn't really want to touch too much on the modern day. One is because in my dissertation, I don't mention the program I helped co-found at all. But there's been a lot of programs that have opened up in the last 20 years, and I didn't write anything about them in the dissertation. And I said to myself, and people in my talks would say, why didn't you write about the modern-day programs? And I said, well, some of these other program founders are my friends, and they're my competitors, and I don't really feel the right to sort of write about them. Mm-hmm. What I did with the dissertation is I did it was basically a massive literature review. So, and it's available online. It's called Stories from the Elders, Chronicles and Narratives from the Early Years of Wilderness Therapy. And that has all the sites. But this book, what I did with Stories from the Field, is I asked 26 other program founders of modern day currently open programs to write the story of founding their program. So it's two halves. The first half of the book is a gigantic literature review that weaves a story that gives the background of many of these programs from they will mention in their chapters, like Outward Bound or BYU 480, which was Brigham Young University 480 class with was youth leadership through outdoor survival. And Boy Scouts of America was a critical, many, many people in this field were involved with scouting. And they wrote a chapter about founding of their programs. And so in all, I got 26 chapters contributed. And what the book, all the profits from this book go to fund research in wilderness therapy. So some of the modern day programs that many of you know would be Red Cliff Ascent wrote a chapter, Soul Tracks, Second Nature, Seuss of the Carolinas, Outback Therapeutic Expeditions, Pacific Quest, True North Wilderness, Open Sky Wilderness. So every most modern day programs, not all, because I couldn't get everybody, and it would be too big of a book,
sure,
wrote a chapter. So if someone is interested in a program, or they can read a chapter from the founder or one of their current leaders.
You know, Will, as a psychologist, I'm really excited about the wilderness programs and the shift over the last 20 years. And in looking at some of the research from these programs, they've really been able to show that these programs can improve adolescents' moods, behaviors, as well as motivation, life skills, and even interpersonal relationships. Are there any other benefits that you've seen over the past 20 years that these programs really benefit?
Yes. Now, interestingly enough, I have a whole chapter that was contributed by the Outdoor Behavioral Research Center, which is at the University of New Hampshire. That chapter explains all of the benefits in current research. There's programs that have shown incredible help in helping kids with attachment disorders, and risk management-wise, they're actually, compared to other sports that or other activities that young people do, wilderness therapy is actually quite safer than perhaps playing football or mountain biking. And so the field is growing and the research is coming in, and I will say the Outdoor Behavioral Outdoor Behavioral Research Center.org has a huge bibliography of articles. And I think that shift of research becoming key to all programs has really happened in the last 20 years. I think previous to that, there was more of the quote-unquote black box. Everybody does it one way and people get better. And I think all current modern-day programs have someone who's in charge of doing research. Because if you're not effective in doing what you do, you're not gonna get insurance reimbursement, and you shouldn't be working with people. You got to prove that you're effective, because these are expensive programs, as any treatment programs. And I'm sure just as Matt is experiencing at Betty Ford, you know, they have to do a lot of research outcomes, and I think everybody in the field should do it.
Now, Will, if you could share some of those statistics. One of the things that I love is the fact that when I'm reading your book or when I'm working on a show, I'm usually pedaling at the gym. And so I get people that walk up to me and they look at the book and they go, oh, this one's about wilderness, or this one's, you know, whatever the subject may be. And I had quite a few people this week that came up to me and said, oh, wilderness therapy, you know, I've heard about that, but you know, what are the statistics on it? How good is it really? And I said, listen to the show and find out.
Nice. Well, I thank you for doing that. What we have found out from the center is that, generally speaking, most of the programs, OBH programs, demonstrate that clients experience severe problems who enter OBH programs have experienced significant gains from participation. And so the data is showing that 6 months to 1 year afterwards, that these changes stay, that they don't drop off. And that's through we're using the Youth Outcome Questionnaire. That's some pretty significant data that's coming out.
So, you know, recently with the passing of Nancy Reagan, you know, I think about her Just Say No campaign and our leader, Betty Ford, you know, who was one of the most prominent public advocates on substance abuse treatment. Both of these former first ladies recognize addiction as a chronic disease, and it really takes time to allow the brain to heal. Is the time period a factor in determining the client's length of stay, or what goes into factoring really an effective length of stay?
You know, that's another great question. Many years ago, wilderness therapy programs tend to have, not unlike alcohol and drug rehabilitation centers, 21 days. Well, the center, they started doing research, Dr. Keith Russell, and showing that actually 21 days, discharging at 21 days, wasn't the most effective time. It's usually about 6 to 8 weeks where the change process, and many of us use the University of Rhode Island's change assessment to see that, is internalized after about 6 to 8 weeks. So 21 days was just at the time where the change was starting to happen.
Now, we have a message that's coming in. Again, this is an email that came in last night. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to send us a question. This one is a comment, and I think it goes right to what it is that you're saying. This one says, 5 years ago, after failing to see results in two local therapeutic programs, we sent our daughter to a wilderness program in Montana. She returned a responsible, compassionate individual with life skills that she has carried forward into adulthood. Now a junior in college, she is both a leader and a team player with her classmates and at her job. I can't speak more highly of this type of experience for parents and their out-of-control teenagers. And this is from Marianne in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Wow, that's great. Marianne, thank you for sending that in. And I think that Marianne's comments reflect what a lot of parents and participants of this program is just stepping away and going out there and being challenged, being out there in the wilderness and being on their own, being away from all the distractions of modern-day life, and having time to reflect and think about, where do I want to go in my life? And having guides, staff, who are out there helping them process that those issues. Therapists coming in and out in the field, and to help them sort of, all the influences are out when you're in the wilderness. And Summit is a hybrid program. So what Kurt Hahn, the founder of Outward Bound, used to say is dunk them and dry them. Go out and have the experience, come back in, and process that experience, and then go back out. And that's where we're strongly influenced by the Outward Bound model. But that whole idea is to take that time away from the world, because you're to deconstruct some of the patterns that have been harmful to you.
You know, in the field of substance abuse treatment, we're moving towards this self-management approach that I think has a lot of similarities with the wilderness approach. And services are really being delivered more extensively versus intensively over a longer period of time. And it goes in line with the concept that we're calling recovery management. And in adolescent behavior treatment, I believe wilderness therapy lends itself to a lot of this self-efficacy, self-empowerment concepts. Do you believe this is intentional? And how, when these young adults go home, does this play out?
It's definitely intentional. And the whole model is that more self-efficacy, more independent living, more thinking for oneself, and not being influenced by all the negative messages that come through. And I think it's playing out. What we're seeing in a lot of programs is two ways. Let's sum it. We have a yearly reunion. Now we've been in existence for 20 years, and I have former students who have become staff in my program because they found something that they love to do. And many who enter into this field, the students also find that wanting to be in the helping profession and going on to be nurses or paramedics. Also, some of them find out they love the outdoors and the adventure. Maybe they've lived in a city their whole life and it was hard for them, and they found something they feel really good about and a connection to the earth. And I think that those are key pieces that help create change for people.
You know, well, in 1990, after Dr. Bandaroff launched Wilderness Family Therapy, it seems he was trying to address the adolescents that make improvements in progress at the wilderness program, but after returning to their similar family dynamics, can lose ground. How has mm-hmm. Summit and the industry as a whole changed the family dynamic to minimize the backsliding after they return home?
Well, as a field in general, what you're seeing is more transitional programming. So there are a number of different programs called, like Vive and Homeward Bound, where they will help follow up. They will work with the client when they're in the wilderness program, and then they will follow the family and the student back home, working with them to help keep those changes in place. Programs will also be doing part of that feedback to the Vive program, or there's another one called 360, Second Nature 360, and then there's and Homeward Bound. So as a field in general, that's what's happening, is more transitional programming. And being very intentional with us at Summit, we do family work at the first session. And I just met with some families earlier today. We start talking the first day of admissions. We start talking about the last day of being in the program and how do we make those transitions stick. So there's a lot of family work that's going on, much more family work than when Dr. Bandaroff had written that piece on wilderness family systems. And I think that's one of the very strong things that have, or positive things that's happened in the field in the last 20 years, is you see much more family program than you did initially, because before it was just the identified client and not the family system. And I know, Matt, you've seen that improve greatly at Betty Ford.
Yeah, the family plays the most prominent role.
Yeah, and we've seen it as well, and it's one of the things I completely agree. It's one of the strongest, most beneficial things that has been added to the industry, because then we're not seeing them two and three and four times, having to go back out, pick them up. And in fact, one of the stories that I tell of a client that came to me one time and said, kind of angrily, you know, and he said, you know, I have to hire you again to get my runaway daughter. You know, you tell me, what's wrong with these programs? Why is it that she's run away three times now, every time she comes back? And I said, well, and the client's name was Peter. I said, Peter, what's the common denominator? And he paused for a long time and said, it's me. He said, you're saying it's me. And I said, no, you're saying it's you. So, yes, the fact that, you know, that the aftercare, you know, has grown so much and there's so much being done, I think has just benefited everybody. So I think that's a wonderful point. Now, we're going to take a break. But again, I want anybody, if you want to follow along with us, if you're sitting at your desk, you want to open up another window, go to summitachievement.com and you can see some of the things that Will has written. You can learn a little bit about the program as we talk about it. But in the meantime, we're going to take a break. We will be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with, in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Dr. Will White, and we are talking about the wilderness experience.
You know, Will, one question I hear a lot in regards to treatment is, how do I get my kid to go to treatment? I remember a few years ago, Alan and I were working with a family in New Jersey, and they have specific different laws and regulations regarding to consent and treatment, and even states like Washington allow some adolescents to decide if they'll consent to treatment. What advice do you have for parents to get their children to consent? Like, do you use interventions, or what recommendations would you give?
It's very individually focused. The practice best is to hire an educational consultant who can sit down with you and help you decide what is the best route to go. So there are all levels of ways to get a student or a client into a wilderness therapy program. So one way would be hiring an interventionist and having them the student transported to a wilderness therapy. And that's what Alan does, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so that is, and that is used in a lot of different cases, because sometimes things have gotten to a point where you're really saving someone's life. You cannot wait, and you can't. And then other times it's, hey, we've got a problem. Let's sit down, and a parent is going to they're going to seek counsel from an educational consultant who gives them a list of different programs. They're going to sit down with their child and say, hey, you're going to go to one of these programs, and this is why. Now, you never want to put someone in a position of approaching a child where you think it's going to be a danger of self or others if you give them that information. So making sure you get professional advice before saying, I'm sending you at a wilderness program. And making sure you find the right program for your child. Because not all programs... And wilderness therapy isn't necessarily the best for every type of disorder. So active eating disorders in wilderness therapy, there's not a lot of research in that. And actively suicidal or violent. But mood disorders, mild substance abuse, sometimes programs that are very specific on substance use are quite good at that. But in most of the programs, it's more mild versus wilderness therapy is not a place for detox from chemicals or alcohol.
Yeah, to take the question one step further, you know, I've had the true honor to watch West Shield Adolescent Services gently talk to kids into going into treatment and then getting them to buy in and to really go for it. Unfortunately, sometimes that's not always the case with parents. So what advice do you have when one of the parents is not on board and obviously more anxious or scared about this idea of their child going away to a program like a wilderness program?
I think for parents like that who are very anxious and worried is talking to the program, because their admissions people are very good at it, educating themselves, because a lot of the fears are driven unrealistic. Oh, something bad's going to happen. Well, something bad's going to happen if you don't have some sort of intervention to have. So education first and foremost. And getting that guidance. Because when someone hires someone like West Shield to do an intervention, it's sort of them admitting that they're powerless. And that's part of their process that they got to go through. They need help from others. And by the time you're sending your child to a wilderness therapy program, you're admitting, like, I've got to get help. And we're here in the field to help you.
Right. And I think to add to that, at least in the manner in which we handle that, is when we start talking with that parent, we recognize them in feeling somewhat powerless or feeling like a failure. And one of the things that I've said when my children were much younger is I would explain to them that they probably have a better chance of getting, at the time, my 8-year-old to go to bed at 8 o'clock. Because even at 8 years old, he knows my buttons. He knows, you know, Dad, can I have a glass of milk? Dad, can you rub my back? Can you read me another story? And they're stretching it out. That parent that I'm talking to, I explained to them, they would have a better chance at that. So not to look at themselves as failing with their child, but understanding that their child knows their buttons. Their child doesn't know our buttons, and that's half the benefit of why we're able to sit down with them and get them to agree to calmly go to a program, knowing that we're going to be focused on their care and welfare the entire time.
And that's the job of the professionals. I think you really a good job explaining all that. I think the field of wilderness therapy is run by people they know that that is their job, and they have to do a good job. Kurt Hahn, the founder of Outward Bound, Larry Olson and Ezekiel Sanchez, who worked at BYU and then went on to find Anasazi Foundation, those are some of the key leaders who taught many, many in this field how to be kind and compassionate, caring, but also clear on expectations. Because having a child move from being a child to an adolescent and adult is in a very difficult process. And history reflects that it's usually not done by the parent. It's usually by a coach. It's usually by someone in that, some adult other than a parent who helps guide that child to growing up and going through the difficulties.
So, Matt?
Yeah, so in the field of substance abuse treatment, like I said about the self-management, the model, we're really looking towards getting individuals to practice on their own what they're learning when they come home from these facilities. Is there something in a specific way that skills that you feel that they learn that they can utilize in the real world?
Yes. So many of the self-efficacy is one skill. If you think about simple as packing a backpack and or executive functioning, organizing, prioritizing, not complaining about the weather and how it's impacting you, but taking action to stay warm, to stay dry. Those and empowering themselves, expressing themselves, leaning on others when we're tired. Hey, can you, let's take a break, working within a team. All of those things are real life applications. They're backpacking or they're in the wilderness. Everything that we do in wilderness programming can be applied to school, family, and work. Teamwork, leaders. It's leadership training.
Yeah. Will, we have about 11 minutes, and anybody that listens to this show knows that one of my favorite parts of it are the success stories. Now, we know the title of the book is Stories from the Field, so please share some of your favorite stories and how they impacted the families the young people went home to.
I think one of my favorite stories is a young lady who came to Summit, and it so profoundly impacted her that she went on to nursing school, then went on to help start a program in the early years. And she said, everything that I learned good about myself was from being at Summit. I felt so bad because I just felt like a failure in many different ways. And I worked at Summit on myself, and I realized it wasn't Summit that did it, that I did this work, and that I could see the good in myself, and I could share that good with others, and I could help pull the good out of others, because she had spent a fair amount of time thinking about focusing on what was wrong with herself, and it changed her viewpoint of things. Other story, another story, a young man who was addicted to marijuana, and he hadn't not smoked marijuana for like 3 years. And by the time he left, he's like, finally, I'm clear again. And he realized that a lot of his executive functioning issues, organization, was because his marijuana use was so kind of scrambling his brain that he couldn't prioritize. He became amotivational. One time had been active in athletics. He had given up all that for just sitting around and smoking marijuana. And every day after 15, 20 days here, he started to go, wow, I can see things differently now. And it was just that time of eating very healthy food, spending time with healthy people, being off the internet, and being physically fit, that actually it was transformational. Those are two quick little stories.
Mm-hmm. So
we have families that come back every year for our reunion in celebration of how things have changed. I've had students go on to become military, work in the military. Others have come back, obviously, to come back and work in our programs, and others have helped start other programs, which is a wonderful, I have to just see it all as a compliment.
Yeah, and we're all really excited about the book, Will. As far as what's next for you, where do you go from here?
Well, I'm really interested in where's the field going, because the field is it's becoming more and more people know about wilderness therapy, and I have part of me is it's always a little cautious because there's more and more there tends to be a certain amount of programs that are starting to open up, and it seems like there's more venture capital money coming into it, and I'm a little bit concerned about it because the programs, if you think about the early days of the programs, they weren't just focused on they weren't all about the money, and programs have got to do better work on getting insurance reimbursement, and that's I'm seeing some programs are really moving to research and getting insurance to help pay for services, and some are spending more money on marketing, and that's a concern for me in the future of the field, and I think the next 5 years that will all play out. Because if you know, Matt, in the substance abuse field, there was a big growth, and then there was a big decline, and then we've gone back to a growth movement. Wilderness therapy actually had that. In 2008, there was about half the programs in the country closed with the Great Recession. And now there's more and more opening, and I see some that are really opening up for the right reason, and I'm certainly concerned about some opening up that seems like, and Matt, I don't know if you can share that sometimes if Betty Ford is one of the greats in the field, but I don't know if you see that in your area.
Well, you know, we've really benefited recently for having wonderful relationships with the managed care companies. I guess I'm curious where is the relationship with most of the wilderness programs and managed care?
Only a small group of programs, and Summit is one of them, get insurance reimbursement. Most are private pay or state-funded.
Now, Will, is there a movement towards a conversion of funds? Because I know that in many situations, you know, there'll be a child that might be a good fit to go to a wilderness program, and then the insurance company says, well, you know, we'll pay 10 times that for them to go into residential, but yet that may not be the perfect fit. Is there any conversations in regards to this conversion that allows them to go in and do the wilderness part first, and then maybe go from there to a different type of residential or something?
Absolutely.
Where everybody's working together.
In case by case, you're seeing that happening more and more, and that's a very positive part, is because there's accreditation by the Association for Experiential Education. Most programs are licensed and have independently licensed clinicians working at them, and many are beginning to do more and more insurance reimbursement, and there's helping in the continuum of care. Most wilderness therapies are really considered intermediate level of care.
All right. We have another question that has come in from a listener. Again, this one reads, as a parent of two tweens and a teen, I have a question for Will. Are wilderness programs a mid to upper class opportunity, or are at-risk youth associated with gangs and or lower income families also given the opportunity to participate in this type of therapy?
Yes, they are. And in the book, it really describes all the varieties. So state-funded programs are available, and actually that was one of the biggest movements before the private pay market. So programs like Vision Quest or even Outward Bound had all state funded. A place called Pinnakee's Island, which was off the coast of Cape Cod, which is now going to reopen again, and that is that's state funds that are for at-risk youth. So it's actually started, there were more state funded programs many years ago, then the private pay showed up, and now you're seeing both converge.
Now you had mentioned that you have 26 chapters in the book that are of some of the other owners of the different programs. What are some of the stories? In other words, for somebody who hasn't read the book, share a little bit about the information that they can get from that, and are there also, you know, success stories that are coming from these different programs?
Yes, there. So every chapter I sent them a questionnaire. Here, what I would like you to answer within 4 to 5 pages. When did you start? What were your influences? Who were your key people? And who influenced you to start? Where did you start? Who and what is different about your model? And so we have programs from Hawaii to Canada to North Carolina, Utah, Idaho, all over. Some are for adult programs like Legacy Outdoor Adventures in Utah. And then some are for, there's for the 11, 12-year-olds, there's at Second Nature down in the Carolinas is a basically, I think it's called Little Steps. It covers the whole gamut of types of programs, and many of the stories are written by the founders, and it's a great piece to have for people who are interested in sending their child to the field, to the program, and also for if somebody wants to work in the field, they can find out a little bit about the history of a program that they might be interested in working at.
You know, that's a great addition. I didn't think of that, but when I was reading it, one of the things that I got from it was, you know, as a professional in the field, I saw that, you know, to me, if I was an educational consultant, if I was a SELPA coordinator, a local therapist working with groups, you know, I would want to have that because it seemed to make it so much easier to learn a little bit about some of the programs that are out there, and especially some of the newer ones. And I know in this day and age, I mean, it's difficult to try to go out and tour all the programs that are out there. And I know the professionals do a great job of getting out there, at nearly every conference. I know there are tours that they can go to. But I felt that being able to sit there and read it in the book was so advantageous that if I was doing that, I would certainly want to have that in front of me and really feel like I was going into each program knowing that I had a little bit of the history and the background of it.
And I think I don't know if you saw in the back, there is a large index, and there's a bibliography, a 5-page bibliography of a 6-page bibliography on research and outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find, if you're a graduate student or undergraduate and you want to write a paper on emerging trends in wilderness therapy or the role of physical exercise in wilderness therapy for adolescent women, I mean, those articles are in here and you can cite them and find them.
Yeah, well, and I know that that there's at least one professional out there that has the book and is very happy with it, because I was on an airplane and I was reading the book and there was a psychologist that was seated across the row and could see the cover. And so they asked me, they said, oh, what is that, you know, about? And so I said, well, here, would you like? And they started reading it and I could tell they were so enthralled in it that when it came time when we landed and stuff, they were still reading it. And I said, you know what? I can get another one. You can go ahead and keep it. You seem to really be enjoying it. So it obviously is doing some good out there. Well, I just want to thank you so much. You're a pillar in this society. You are doing the things that are not only getting the information out to the professionals, but still, helping the families that you do through Summit. And again, for anybody out there, if you want to get more information, you can go to their website, which is summitachievement.com. If you're driving, don't try to write this down, but you can always go to our site. It is answers4thefamily.com, and all of the information will be there. Will, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Alan. And Matt, it was a pleasure. And Matt, I got to get your address. I'll send you a copy of the book.
I'm waiting for it. Excited.
All right, great. And Matt, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. And again, can you share again if anybody wants to get information either on Hazelton Betty Ford or on the upcoming symposium?
Yeah, I'd love it. Our phone number is 310-307-7053. You can call 24 hours a day. The symposium, again, is Thursday, March 24th. And to get information on that, you go to www.hazeltonbettyford.org /symposium, and we look forward to seeing people there.
All right. And Matt, again, thank you. I hope that you'll come back. I would love to have you join me. You know, this is always fun to work with you. And for everybody else out there, if you have missed a show or you want to share a show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show for free on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. Again, this is the best way that we can get the word out. You know, we don't charge for being on the show. We don't charge anything in regards to doing this. We see it as a way to get information about good programs, good people that are out there doing good works for all of us. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and like us. So for everybody out there, have a great week and be good humans.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.